You're listening to the North Peace Roundtable podcast, your weekly podcast about theology and the Christian life. Both feeling it today.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Episode 131. Thanks for tuning in. My name is Andrew, and with me, as always, is Cameron.
Good day, everyone.
Good day. Why don't you angle your mic down a little bit?
Good
there go.
Day.
There we go.
Everyone.
Okay. Is this our first time recording the podcast? How's your week been? Or I guess your 2 weeks. We didn't record last week.
That's right. No, it's been just a full couple of weeks.
Yep.
Last week, it was just long days with work, which doesn't happen too often.
He's a government employee, everyone.
That's right. And then this week, it's just been wonderful. It's good weather, good
right?
days.
I know. I was telling you before we press record, set up my kid's trampoline on Tuesday. But yeah, I had told them, well, it's supposed to be like 18 on Sunday. This weekend, I'll set it up. But then that was Monday. And then probably every hour from Monday till Tuesday morning, Dad, can you set up the trampoline? So finally, I was like, fine!
Yeah, exactly.
I will set it up now!
All right!
All right! That's exactly right.
I saw a picture yesterday of a kid, and it was the dad looking at the kid, like, staring at his eyeballs. And it's like when you tell your kid, I'll do that in about 5 minutes, and for the next 4 minutes and 59
seconds.
Yeah, he's
standing right there. So now, is it now? Is it now?
That's right.
Oh, man. But
how else was your week?
It was good.
Anything exciting?
Well,
extra church meetings.
Extra church meetings are always fun. Sunday night, if you didn't come, you missed out. Talking about church leadership and elders and pastors. It was actually really good. I actually quite enjoyed, those meetings. But
There's maybe 50, 60 people.
Yeah, I think 50. I counted 50. But
great.
Yeah, it's good. But that's not what we're here to discuss. We have two questions that came in. And they're both really good questions. So here's the first one. Assuming financial considerations aren't an issue, as they often are with disposing human remains and funerals, how would you counsel a member of your church who asked to be cremated, or a family desiring their loved ones to be cremated? Would you bless them to do it, counsel them towards burial, why or why not? So basically, I think what this, I don't know if this person's asking this, but I'm going to rephrase it. Like, is cremation a good option for Christians? Is that sinful? Like, does the Bible say anything about cremation? If you're listening, you're not aware, like, cremation is when you basically, like, burn your human remains. So then it's just ashes in a urn, essentially, right? And then I've seen it where some people keep the urn. And then I've been a part of burials, but there's a name for it, but at the cemetery, there's like a big, and then each has like a little, it looks like, it honestly reminded me of a mailbox with lock boxes,
that's right.
But then each family member has their little slot in the tower of,
I can't remember the name. Big one in town here.
Yeah. At Woodlawn they have one. So I don't know. What do you think? Is it even an issue for Christians, or?
I think that, and I would guess this person, whoever asked that, may have grown up in a church that kind of taught you, like, to not do any, like, that burial was the preferred method so that when Christ returns and we're resurrected, that you can, like, I'm envisioning these old pictures I have of, like, I don't even have a visual of the ground moving, but just, like, caskets opening and people rising, and somehow that the miracle would be interrupted if there was cremation,
sure,
or if the ashes were not together. There's some fascinating implications with that train of thought, but I think that's where it came from, because I think I remember that as a kid, like, that being a problem, because I don't, like, I poked around and there's only a couple examples of cremation in the Bible, and it was more so like, oh, we're in a rush, we're gonna Saul and his
or like kill all the false prophets and then burn their body. Like, okay, well, that's not quite what
exactly. But no, I don't think there is any issue with cremation.
No.
It's fascinating. Yeah, it's fascinating to think of why there would be an issue, because bodies decompose in caskets also.
Yeah, you turn to dust either way. Like, even it just reminded me Genesis 3 when God told Adam, by the sweat of your face you shall eat bread till you return to the ground, for out of it you were taken. You are dust, and to dust you shall return. So, I mean, given enough time, everybody turns to dust, essentially.
Because then you'd have to enter the conversation of what type of casket. Is a steel casket? Is it vacuum sealed? Like, at what point?
Sure.
And maybe that's why the Egyptians mummified and went through the whole curing process, because their thought of what afterlife would look like is different. But yeah. I wonder why the preservation of bodies was so detailed in some cultures. But yet, it's quite fascinating, actually, the Muslim culture here in town. They have worked through some legislation to start organic green burials, because they, in their faith tradition, believe that the body should be wrapped in cotton and buried. Truly going, so not, no enclosure at all. And so,
which right now, like, there's laws around that, correct?
I think there's some form of legislation, much a law.
Okay.
But I was just actually with the parks manager, and she was working with a mom here in town to create an option for these organic burials.
That's interesting.
So body's going in the ground, but body will decompose much quicker. Dust to dust. You're going back to the ground. So then if saying cremation is a problem for our faith tradition, how we believe we will be reunited with Christ, I don't think there's any difference.
I think biblically there's nothing one way or the other. There's nothing that says, hey, cremation's better. There's nothing that says you have to. There's nothing that says you can't. I remember, I this was maybe 6 months ago, I was doing a funeral, and I believe the person had been cremated. And there's a lady that was here, or, you know, sometimes funerals, people just show up half hour early and just sit. So she was sitting and kind of called me over and, you know, Pastor Andrew, what does the Bible say about cremation? Almost like a, uh-oh. And right. I said, it says nothing about it. And she kind of went like, oh. And I'm like, literally, some people struggle with the whole, like, you're burning your body. And I've heard this argument. Well, fire is usually associated with judgment. So why would you let your body be burned? And I'm like, okay, well.
Same with, there's as many as refining gold in a fire. I mean.
Yeah. And then, like, so a guy that I know that grew up at Old Colony, because in the, like, Old Colony Mennonite, you are not allowed to be cremated. Mm. It is a sin. And he said, he had a conversation with someone once and said, what happens if I die in a house fire and my body's burned? And it was kind of like, well, that's different.
It wasn't your choice.
Yeah, it wasn't a willing thing. And but you can see that they were kind of like, yeah, right. Did that? Is that person not going to make it because they were burned in a fire? Like, so I've always told people, like, if you're going to get cremated, you're just, you know, speeding up the process of what's going to happen anyway. Like, sure. Your body's going to decompose. And I know some people, well, your bones won't. And okay, well, give it enough time.
And that's all the cremation ashes are. Grinded bones.
Sure, exactly. Yeah. Gone. So for me, like, so even candidly, like, Molly and I, we went and did our will, and, you know, you do your whole power of attorney and your will, and they ask you, how are you going to be buried? And so we're both going to be cremated. Because that's just, I don't know, in my mind, it's easier. To answer the question, if someone came to me, I guess the question was, if someone in our congregation came and said, you know, my grandma's going to die and we're thinking about cremating her, is that a problem? I would say, no, of course not. I think either way has pros and cons. So going back to the Old Colony thing, I did a funeral two summers ago where he had grown up all Old Colony and become a born again believer, and they attended our church. And but then the funeral was out in Presbyteau, and man, it was pretty powerful. Like, how some of the practices they do, like, as they bring the casket to the burial, they dig the hole themselves, the family does, and then they have an open casket by the hole that you're going to put them in, kind of say your last goodbyes. They close the casket up. They themselves, the family, lowers it in, and then the family themselves put the dirt back on.
Wow.
And just kind of like I just was watching it almost in tears, going like, man, this is so cool. So I think there's positives to that. There's some, yeah, it's maybe less emotional to, you know, put your little urn in the ground. And, mm-hmm. But maybe not. Maybe for you, that's all you need. Like, I think it's...
Well, we're doing that for my dad in May.
Right, yeah, yeah. So you're going to...
My dad and I had conversations about that when he was in hospice. And he said, he's kind of a cheap guy. So he's like, I want to be cremated. Like, do not waste money on this yes. process. You know, my grandparents passed and they're, it was 20 years ago, but their funerals were expensive.
Oh, right?
And so he said, you know, nope, cheapest way, you know.
Yeah.
He would joke too, like, see that bin over there? You know, the big garbage bin outside the hut. Settled down. But he did ask that once he's cremated that he does get buried, because he also made a point. I don't want to be on someone's like fireplace a long time.
Sure.
And so my uncle died last year, and they were really close. They weren't brothers. They married sisters, but they were really close. So my cousins and my mother and siblings and I had a Zoom family meeting a couple months ago where we're going to go to my hometown where my grandparents are buried, and we're buying them each a plot for their urns, and we're going to do a dual graveside family.
That's kind of cool.
Get together. And these guys will be buried in their urns. They're both cremated next to each other. And then the families would kind of branch out from there in opposite directions.
Yeah, buy plots. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's interesting because I thought about that also. And of course, when someone dies, you think about just the geography and like the area. Like when I go home, I kind of, every time I go to my hometown, I do go to this old stone church across the river from where I lived and my grandparents lived and where all of them are buried. And in Latvia, we did the same for Tatiana's grandparents, and their graveyard is in a forest.
Hmm.
And so shallow graves with root systems, because then they can't cut down the forest. So it's like a nature preserve also. So you walk through a forest and you find where your family's buried.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, but I thought about myself, and I'm like, okay, well, I guess I would go there. But then Tanya said, well, I'd like to be spread in the ocean. I've just always felt close to God in the ocean, and that's what I love. And it's kind of weird because I thought, well, oh, that's kind of odd, because if she were to pass, I feel like I'd selfishly want that urn in the house. Yeah. Like, it's kind of a weird thing. And so then you start thinking about...
She won't know.
Yeah, well, exactly. You start thinking about the fact that all of these emotions conflict with our belief that they're gone.
Yes.
You know, like that they're with the Lord.
Yeah.
And all of these other emotions are just very natural and human, but also not that important.
Yeah. And as far as like the resurrection, you know, people are like, well, if you scatter, you know, it always makes me laugh that we're like, oh, we're making it harder for God to raise people from the dead. I'm like,
or it's going to be like outside of that little circle where God's like, guys,
okay, give me a minute, because you're the dust that was your nose is over there, and now I got to bring it over here. And it's kind of like, well, no, like, you know, 1 Corinthians 15, Paul says, like, it's going to happen in a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, which basically is our way of saying, like, in a snap of the fingers, you're going to be raised from the dead, and it's not going to be a problem. I don't think there's any... Paul never writes like, so make sure your body stays in the same, right? It's just kind
of
that
would be a bit of a clear indication, like, flee from sexual immorality, and when you die, bury yourself.
Do not get cremated. Like, it's going to be miraculous either way. And so, yeah, for me, it's just kind of like whatever is going to be most meaningful and help a couple or a family mourn and grieve. But even, I'll tell you, even that presbytude, a funeral was really powerful, but I heard multiple people when they came to the casket, right? And he, you know, the guy's in his suit and they've made his, you know, but multiple people said, that's not him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that doesn't even look like him. Yeah. There's some, like, you're right, that person's gone, right? Like, their body is here, and their spirit with him, because he was a believer. He's with the Lord.
Yeah, we had an open casket for my uncle, and then he was cremated. It was bizarre.
Okay, that's interesting.
The funeral home and the guy that owns the funeral home has been in our small town. His brother was a paramedic, his other brother was a pastor, and his dad was the head pastor. So the whole family had the inside market on
inside markets.
Yeah, ambulance, funeral home director, pastor. But they have done everyone in our family
yep.
for 30 years. And he's like, hey, listen, you know, not to be insensitive, but we do have rental coffins. And I think it didn't change the price too much. But so they had a service with my uncle, open casket. And then after the service, he was cremated.
Huh. Okay.
So it's like
best of both worlds.
I guess if that means something to you to have that.
Well, you know, we're kind of going off on tangents. But when my grandpa died, they asked my dad if he wanted to push the button to like fire up the fire. My dad. Huh. And my dad was just kind of like, no, thank you.
Right.
But they said apparently for some people being involved in that really
helped. Did he make a joke or something?
No, I made a joke to my sisters. I said, to my dad, I said, Dad, when you die, I'm going to pay to push the button, but not tell anyone. Right. And then we're going to gather around before you're cremated. And I'm going to say to my sisters, any last words? And right when one of them starts, I'm going to smash the button. My dad, his humor is like me. He's like, oh yeah, do it, son. And my mom's like, no, you can't. That's so cruel.
No, she was like, no, you can't.
Yeah, my poor mom can't talk. Sorry, what's that, mom? I can't hear. So anyways.
Thank you for your question.
To answer your question, yeah, I don't see any issue with.
Save $1,000.
Cremation, burial.
Yeah.
I think it just depends on what is going to be meaningful and help mm-hmm. your family grieve the most. For some people, I got to see the casket going to the ground. Okay.
Yeah.
Like if that's going to help you, that's great. So, okay. The next question is completely different. So, and I'm going to read like the context. I sent you basically the little snippet, but this person said, I enjoy reading Christian historical fiction as it helps me understand the culture of Bible times and usually helps me understand, you know, certain biblical contexts such as head coverings, etc. But the story of Bathsheba is one of those stories that seems to differ depending on who's writing it. I understand authors take liberties, so we don't know exactly what happened. She mentions a book that Bathsheba was portrayed as being taken from her rooftop bath by force and basically raped by David. Sorry, I should say, like, this might get a little, like, intense for young ears if your family listens, because we're going to talk about, you know, adultery and those kind of things. Mm-hmm. She describes the possibility of her family being devastated. She's now defiled, not suitable for marriage by anyone else culturally. In the book, Bathsheba's mother sadly tells her, when the king loses interest in you, you'll live in another part of his harem with the other women he took, cared for, but never called by him again. This book goes on to describe Bathsheba forming a lasting, loving relationship with David in which she forgives him. This book made me feel very sad and a little angry about the way a king like David may have treated women. But in other books, Bathsheba is described as a willing participant in mutual sin. She's seen as having lusted after David and willingly going to him. So anyways, long question, but which is true? There's a huge difference in the portrayals of this story. And I would say even I've heard sermons that are vastly different preached on this topic. So not even just historical fiction, just like pastors interpreting what took place. If Bathsheba was raped and taken by force from her family, that's awful. If she went willingly, it's still sad that they sinned together, but it doesn't make David look as bad. How should we view the biblical facts of David and Bathsheba? So, I mean, great question. And again, like, yeah, historical fiction, Christian historical fiction, that's all fine and good. But like I said, like, I've heard sermons where the pastor basically is saying, you know, David raped Bathsheba. Mm-hmm. Or I've heard sermons where it's like, no, they were both consenting, willing adults. And I get what this person is saying. On one hand, the story sucks either way.
Yep.
But on one hand, it makes David look a little bit less bad.
Right.
So I kind of, this is, the story takes place in 2 Samuel 11. And I'll just say right up front, we're not given all the details of how and, like, we're given some details, but we're, a lot is just kind of left to speculation. Like, we're told that, in the spring of the year, the time when kings go out to battle, David stayed home. So first of all, you're kind of like, well, that's odd. that's usually not what happened. And this is the kind of the first time that we're seeing from David, like, oh, you're sending other people out to go to battle for you. Okay, something's off.
Right.
Then the next verse, it's like, it happened late one afternoon when David arose from his couch. And one guy I read was like, this seems odd. David's just kind of lying around. He's napping. The phrase late one afternoon in Hebrew means like at nighttime. So David's just been napping all day. He gets up at night. So again, the guy was like, something's off. Like, right. And then, you know, David sees Bathsheba bathing on the roof. And it says that David sent messengers and took her. And she came to him and he laid with her. And you want to sugarcoat that any other way, but it's literally, you know, she had no choice. He's the king. He sent people. They took her. And it's just painted as like an abuse of power in the least, right?
Yep.
Bathsheba may have said, oh, this is great. I get to go be with the king. We don't know. Right. We're not told anything. But all we know is that David abused his power as king because you can't say no to the king. And then it happens. And I'm not going to read the whole story, but basically Bathsheba gets pregnant because of this. David schemes to get her husband killed, takes Bathsheba as his wife. And then the very last verse says, the thing David had done displeased the Lord, which you're like, yeah, no duh.
Right.
So I don't know. What do you think? Like, is it okay to read possible cultural things? Like, David may have had a harem of women that he had done this with. I don't know if we know for sure Solomon did, because we're told Solomon had 300 wives and 700 concubines. I don't know if we're ever told that David did the same thing.
Yeah, I think authors of literature now have to take liberties because there's not a lot. But one thing I was reading when reading through 2 Samuel is that the language used about taking. There's a few other passages talking about violent, aggressive taking in Genesis and 2 Samuel 13. You see language used of like forcible taking, like I'm going to do this regardless. And I think the difference is and that those people weren't in massive positions of authority or power, like a king. So that language isn't used there. It's simply that he called her, took her, laid with her.
Yeah.
She went back. Interesting that she even reported back like, hey, I'm pregnant now.
Yes.
Does that imply a willing participant? Like, I don't think so. Like I am just considering like here you have King David who mid to late 30s, I don't know, and then Bathsheba possibly young, possibly quite young. I can just imagine, like, I think one writer I read said, like, and it sounds you know, just there was a tremendous imbalance of power, and essentially it would almost be like rape, but not in the traditional sense of forcible confinement and violence, but more so just that power. This is going to happen, and you should be thankful. And I don't know how much culture is involved there either, and I think that was what was so sinful is that, you know, like David just made a choice, which kings of that day could probably do that if they willed. And like, what are you going to do? What's interesting, though, is like the consequence is almost all aimed at David. When Nathan the prophet like delivers consequence from God, it's not. And Bathsheba, I mean, she lost her son, but that was far more significant, I think, for a king to lose their firstborn son. And in Nathan's response from God, he's not blasting Bathsheba as a willing participant. So I guess for me, that kind of just reading the fallout of this sin implies that David was far more responsible.
I think so.
But then the lack of violent language or public outcry or like anything might indicate that it was done in the shadows and a little more from a position of power imbalance and authority rather than public spectacle and violent aggression.
Yeah, I agree. I'm glad you brought that up because, yeah, you read a few other places where, I mean, the Bible describes like horrific things, right? I think it's Dinah is in Genesis, the rape of Dinah, and it's like he humiliated that kind of language used, which is not used with David and Bathsheba. I read that too. I just went, okay, that's interesting. Again, not trying to excuse like David's off the hook, but like it seems different than other instances of this horrific thing happening in scripture. But you're right. I'm glad you brought up the punishment because Nathan, the prophet, comes to David and confronts him on it and basically says, well, now because of this, the sword is never going to depart from your house, meaning you're going to have violence now as a punishment. And then this child is going to die as punishment. And that's what happens. The child dies. And David, right, is fasting on behalf of the child.
It's a really great story. Like, it's so kind of bizarre too.
Oh man. Yeah. And then the child dies. And then you look at what happens to David's family after that. It's exactly right. Like, you know, Solomon's born, but then sons are turning on the kings and the kingdom is literally split in half, you know, Judah and Israel. And all of this comes from this family conflict that David started by doing this. So God's like, man, you're, and yet David repented, which is super interesting. David totally owns up to it. When Nathan confronts him, he says, I've sinned against the Lord. Then there's a few psalms that are written that that David writes when he's busted, basically.
Right.
I'm just trying to flip fast. I think it's Psalm 39? Maybe not.
Well, I guess.
Anyways,
it's
there's psalms where he's like
Amnon and Tamar, also his own kids that that actually had violent rape.
Yeah, totally.
Like that's.
Yeah, this is so his family line is like destroyed because of this choice that he made. And yet I don't. So I think David did abuse his power. I don't think Bathsheba was like, oh, King David, there he is, because we get no indication.
That is a story, though, that she seduced him or she.
No. Yeah, I know. I've heard that. Oh, she bathed on the roof on purpose. And I'm like, no, there's no indication that. The reason she was is because we're told she was finishing her menstrual cycle and you have to do your ritual cleaning outside the house.
Yeah.
So there's nothing like, oh, I know that King David's stayed behind from war and none of that. So I think David absolutely abused his power, but I think it's different than other instances of rape that we see in the Bible. Again, don't hear that I'm not like excusing it. It's horrific what David did. But I don't think the idea of the historical fiction and then Bathsheba is just thrown into the harem and David never cares for her. I don't think that we get that because even like after the son dies, it says David comforted his wife, Bathsheba.
Right.
And they have another son together, Solomon. Like, so I think it's a stretch to just kind of assume, well, other kings did this. So King David would have done that. Nah, I don't think so.
Right.
The amazing thing is that God uses even this horrific thing to bring about Jesus.
Right.
Right. So even if you go to Matthew 1, like the genealogy of Jesus, the line of Jesus through, obviously, I mean, Jesus doesn't have a physical dad, but they count Joseph as his earthly father. And it says like David was the father of Solomon by the wife of Uriah. So they don't mention Bathsheba's name, but it's like, psst, by the way, you all know the story.
Right.
Like Solomon, and then, you know, Solomon's the father of Rehoboam, and all the way down to, and Jesus was born. So here you have like God taking this terrible, horrific thing of this act of sin that happened. And by the way, I'm going to bring about the Messiah through this family lineage that is a mess. Like,
yeah. And then I was reading as you were talking.
Yeah, yeah.
In 1 Kings, Solomon, when he's anointed king, David's an old man, and he actually says, call Bathsheba to me. And you see this kind of like, she's hardly thrown into the harem and forgotten about.
No.
Because even though she said, may the Lord King David live forever, like you see endearing language of like, your son's going to be the king. We're going to anoint him. Call Nathan, call the prophet, bring Bathsheba here. Is he doing right by her?
Yeah.
at the end. But yeah, you hardly see her as out of the story.
Yeah. So yeah, I would say like a story like this is clearly like awful. It's sinful. I mean, what David does is just horrific, right? He takes another man's wife, abuses his kingly power,
has him kill.
Kills the guy essentially. Yeah. So, or plots to kill him. And
sends the note with him.
Yeah, and then there's, well, first of all, he schemes. He brings Bathsheba's husband home, and hey, why don't you sleep with your wife to try and cover it up? Mm-hmm. And then he kills Uriah, and so it's just awful. I mean, David sins horrifically, and I think the consequences we see, right? His family is torn apart, and his kid dies. But then you also see repentance. I mean, you read that David, I think, legitimately repented of sin. His heart was broken. He writes a few psalms about that, like feeling the weight of his sin. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think, you know, God can even still say, yeah, David's a man after my own heart, meaning like David was not a perfect man by far. And yet you see his heart. I mean, he repented of it. And then again, the historical fiction, Christian historical fiction, can be entertaining to read and stuff, but I'm like, yeah, they do take quite a bit of liberty, right? Because anything we read, I don't think Bathsheba was then discarded and, oh yeah, David just had his fun and then he throws her away and, right, he takes her to be his wife. We see indication that he comforted her, that she's still around when he's an old man. So I don't think you can just say, well, this is how all the other kings acted in that day, so David must have just discarded her. I don't think so. Any other thoughts on that? No?
Nope.
Good question.
Great.
Really good question. Those are the kind of the biblical texts that you have to kind of wrestle with going like, what am I reading?
Sure. Yeah.
So, yeah, I think we'll end it there. That's episode 131. And yeah, for real, thanks for those questions. And please keep sending them in if you have other, you know, things that you're reading that you're like, what am I reading? Not that we're the experts by any means, but yeah, thanks for tuning in and we'll talk to you next time.